Pastini is Eugene's new Italian bistro at Oakway Center, dedicated to serving up two of life's greatest pleasures, pasta and wine. Join them for classic favorites like spaghetti and meatballs, linguine with clams and sausage, and fettuccine alfredo paired with hand-selected Pacific Northwest and Italian wines. Pastini. Eat pasta. Drink wine.
Welcome to the Duck Pod. From the Register Guard newsroom, here's Ryan Thorburn and Austin Meek.
Okay, welcome back. We're have a special episode of the Duck Pod today. Recurring guest George Schroeder, a Register Guard alum and USA Today national college football writer, is joining us. George, how's Oklahoma?
It's hot and muggy. It makes me long for Cascadia, especially this time of year. But it's good. I think we passed the tornadoes after an active month. So anyway, now that I've destroyed any hopes that any of your listeners will ever want to come to Oklahoma, it's actually a nice place. But it is definitely hot and muggy this time of year, and it's only going to get hotter.
Yeah, a year ago I was coming back from the Women's College World Series, where Oregon was the top seed, and obviously a lot has changed since that moment for that program. And I happened to catch last night that the UCLA win over Oklahoma in the title game. Before we get into football, just what's that like to have that in that setting in Oklahoma every year? And it seems like an event that really grows in popularity every year.
Yeah, way back in the day, I covered Oklahoma football for the Oklahoma and the Oklahoma City paper, and didn't know much about the Women's College World Series when I moved there from Little Rock to work for the newspaper, and realized it's a big deal in town, and it really is. Now, the event has grown and grown and grown and grown over the years, and obviously ESPN has been a big piece of that, and the stadium only faintly resembles what it used to look like, and they keep adding pieces to it, and it used to just be kind of a nice softball complex, and now it's a legitimate stadium. And when you have a local team in it, which with Oklahoma is kind of more often than not, it takes on this sort of distinctively home flavor, which is sort of weird. This year they had two teams, both their teams, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, were in among the final eight that made it. But even when they're not in it, it's a really cool deal. The city embraces it, and that has remained the case, even though the city now has an NBA team, and it has sort of changed the sports character has changed a little bit. They've kind of gone from feeling like they were a minor league town to a big league town, even though they're probably still a AAA town. And it's a pretty cool event. So I really, really enjoy it. It's a ton of fun to go to. I don't go every year, but it's definitely a point of pride for folks in Oklahoma City, for sure. One of the things that's pretty cool is when you pay attention to college softball and you hear the kids talking about going to Oklahoma City, to OKC, the same way you hear the baseball kids talking about going to Omaha. For somebody who lives in the area, that's pretty cool to hear all the time.
Well, George, we always like to get your perspective on things, because you were here, you wrote for the Register Guard and covered the Ducks up close, and now you have sort of the national perspective of looking all across the country at college football. Here in Eugene, I can say that the anticipation surrounding this Oregon football team is probably as high as it's been since 2014, when Marcus Mariota turned down the NFL to come back for one more run at Oregon. Nationally, as you go around to the different schools over the summer and look at the big picture, what's the buzz about Oregon? Does it match the anticipation that exists here locally, or has it not quite caught up yet? Nationally, are people maybe still a little bit more in wait and see mode about this Oregon team?
Well, I think it's a couple different ways to look at that. The first thing I would say is nationally, there's a tier of two, Clemson and Alabama, probably right now in that order, although Alabama might decide to reorder it. And after that, there's a group of two or three or four programs, really it's three, and it's Georgia, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, not necessarily in that order, that seem like they kind of have been knocking on the door. And then after that, there's kind of, it feels like there's a little bit of a gap before we get to anybody else. And if I were going to say, where could Oregon advance to in this season, I would say somewhere in that third tier, the group after those five teams, is where I would put them. And I think that's being really, really optimistic. And I think that, look, we could all be wrong, but you asked sort of what I think the national vibe is. I think that's what the national vibe is certainly not Alabama-Clemson level, and I'm not sure that the most superheated Duck fan is ready to go there. But I'm not ready to put them in that next tier yet until they prove some stuff. And I think that would go for any team out on the West Coast right now, just given the perception of the Pac-12. I don't think it's always fair, but I do think the Pac-12 has been down the last few years. It's going to take somebody, whether it's Oregon or somebody else, to for example, beat an Auburn in the season opener and get to the playoff and make some noise before that really changes. So I think there's some wait and see with Oregon, and I think if you said, all right, what's kind of the best case scenario, I think a lot of people would say, all right, among the best of that third tier. And that sounds bad, but when you realize I only got five teams in the top two tiers, that's not so bad.
Well, to your point, your colleague Paul Meyerberg from USA Today in the post-spring top 25, he's pretty bullish on the Ducks. He has them number 9. You know, I've seen anywhere from them being fringe top 10 all the way down to that 15 to 20 range. I think number 9 is, that's pretty optimistic in my opinion, but he also has Washington number 12. They have an established program, but they'll have a new quarterback. And then, interesting, Auburn number 16, and I know Gus Malzahn pretty well. What do you think of Auburn going into the season and that marquee matchup between the Pac-12 and an SEC program?
Much as I respect Paul Meyerberg, a lot of all these preseason rankings, whether you do them or I do them or Paul does them or we all get together and do them, are kind of, they're not really worth the paper they're printed on. And, of course, now they're not really printed on paper, so I don't really know if that makes any sense. But that said, I think I like Auburn a lot. I could see them being really good and even the kind of team that could, would, should maybe beat an Oregon, and I'm not predicting that, in the first game of the season. And yet 16 could be about right, simply because of the rest of their schedule. They've got Alabama and Georgia every year for starters, right? And back to back, although the SEC sandwiches that cupcake gang, sandwiches those around the cupcake gang in November. But they've got a difficult schedule. So I think 16, they might lose two or three games and be 16th in the country, maybe even four, whatever, and yet still be a really formidable opponent at the beginning of the season, if that makes sense.
George, I think people will be interested to hear a little bit about your backstory with Gus Malzahn. I remember reading a column that you did here, and I think it was like 2012 when Arkansas State came to Autzen Stadium to play the Ducks, and Gus Malzahn was the coach there, if I'm remembering this correctly, and you did kind of a behind-the-scenes thing there, and I know that you guys have some common background in Arkansas, so tell people a little bit about your background with Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, so I actually met Gus Malzahn when I was working for the Little Rock paper, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, in the mid-90s. And this team from Hughes, Arkansas, Hughes High School. Hughes is a little bitty tiny town in the Mississippi River Delta on the far east side of Arkansas, a poor community, farming community. And they made it to the state finals in whatever class they were in. I want to say it was like class 2A out of 5 at the time. Maybe went to 5As, and they were class 2A. And made the state finals unexpectedly, and it was the first time we'd really paid attention to them. And this was a newspaper at the time that, prided itself on covering statewide high schools and things like that. And so they said, my editor said, George, let's go, is there some kind of a story we can do on these guys in advance of the state title game? You know, you got a week before they all show up to Little Rock in the center of the state for the state championships. And so I made a phone call and ended up spending a couple of days with Hughes High School's football team and their young coach, Gus Malzahn. And it's funny because at the time when I made the first phone call and got him on the phone, I guess I probably called the school and they transferred me down to the field house or something like that. He didn't believe that it was somebody from the Little Rock newspaper because there's no way they would have been calling. He thought it was some of his buddies pranking him. And so I actually had to talk him into the fact, no, it really is. And that's how things worked for Gus Malzahn at the time. So wrote a story about them. They fell about 5 yards shy of winning a state championship. And, as I always told him, I didn't tell him this at the time, but later I said, Gus, that actually made it a better story. And he didn't like to hear that. But so long story short, he later moved across the state into Northwest Arkansas and developed that hurry up, no huddle offense that he sort of became known for, and developed a powerhouse first at a small school level and then at Springdale High School, which is in the largest school classification. And, became kind of a high school legend before he ever got into college coaching. And one of my best friend from college, my former roommate, ended up on his staff at one of the schools he was coaching at, so we developed even closer ties. And so over the years, just based off of that one story, Gus and I became friends. Neither one of us knew where life would take us. And the next thing you know, I'm covering college football for USA Today, and he's the head coach at Auburn, and it's kind of a surprising thing. And yet I have this a relationship with him that goes back to when, he was a young coach at a really small school, obscure school, and we had become friends.
It's amazing because you also covered kind of the rise of Chip Kelly and his offense. How would you compare those two guys? Obviously, they've not symmetrical completely backgrounds, but Chip came from New Hampshire, a small school, and caught fire at Oregon, and has kind of a quirky personality, not known as a putting his arm around the media, and from what I've heard, Gus isn't that way down the SEC. How would you compare those two guys and their offensive pedigree?
Well, I mean, they do it a little bit differently, right? But they both sort of were disruptors when they started their offenses out. And obviously defenses have adjusted over the years, and those guys are smart enough to evolve too. But they were definitely disruptors. So they're very, very bright. And they're completely different kinds of personality types. There's no question about that. But you recognize that they're not just good at offense. They're really good at sort of understanding all the different things that it takes to run a college football program. And those are things that maybe you wouldn't have known about them until they actually got the shot to do it. So I got a tremendous amount of respect for Chip Kelly. And it's kind of interesting that people are wondering now, how's this going to work at UCLA? And they're down on him because the recruiting rankings aren't great. And I do think you're going to have to recruit better. But I also have a lot of sort of confidence that Chip Kelly is going to be good in college football. They're not running the same stuff, by the way, offensively, that he ran at Oregon. And it's not because he didn't have the personnel. It's largely because he has evolved, not just because defenses have evolved and caught up, but because Chip has evolved some after spending all that time in the NFL. There's a lot of NFL offensive concepts he's got going on now. And I think that's sort of one of the things that we'll start to see maybe this year, as I don't know what to expect from them other than improvement from last year. But I realize I didn't answer your question. It's hard to compare and contrast those guys. I do think this, they both have a quick wit when they want to do it and when they want to employ it. And one of the things I really enjoyed about Chip Kelly when he was in Eugene was his press conferences could become sort of zinger fests, and he kind of liked it when people gave it to him as good as he gave it to them. And I kind of appreciate that about him. Gus is not that way. I don't think Gus has a great sense of humor, but I don't think he wants it employed during a press conference. So in a weird way, I think Chip is actually in some ways better with the media than Gus is.
Yeah. Well, I always say in college football, you're always a year away from getting a contract extension or getting fired. And it seems like that's especially true in the SEC. And,
yeah,
you know,
no
with
question.
With Gus Malzahn, just a couple years removed from a big contract extension. And then last year they were 8-5, didn't live up to some of the preseason expectations. It's been kind of boom and bust for him there. How much pressure do you think there is on Auburn to have a great season this year and to start it off with a win against the Ducks in Arlington?
Yeah, I would say there's a ton of pressure on Auburn and Gus Malzahn for those very reasons. You know, the Auburn situation is such that its fans want them to be as good as Alabama at all times, which is a tall order at any time in history. But it's especially tall right now when, okay, if we leave Clemson aside for a second and the argument about whether Clemson has caught and passed Alabama, if we just leave them aside, it's pretty clear that Alabama is on a run that's unprecedented in college football history. They've won 5 national titles in 11 seasons, in Nick Saban's 11 seasons. Nobody's done that. You know, they could have, would have, should have won a couple more, right? So, and you're always in the shadow of Alabama as the Auburn football coach, and now you're in the shadow of Nick Saban, who's on this run. So it's probably an untenable situation, really. All that said, they clearly underachieved last year, or maybe they disappointed and weren't as good as people thought they were going to be, and that's a bad deal after you just signed a 7-year, $49 million contract the previous December. So if they have another 8-5 year, and that's kind of what people expect from them, but I think they sort of defy expectations, good and bad, it seems like. If you expect them to be good, they're not quite as good. When you expect them to kind of be okay, then that's when they can sometimes put together a special year. But if they're 8-5 again, then I think you're going to see some of those boosters. And I'm not saying this is the right thing to do. I'm just saying it's the real thing at Auburn. I think you're going to see some of those boosters trying to put together $30 million and buy out Gus Malzahn. It's amazing that they would do that, spend that kind of money, but that's where you are when it's Auburn.
Well, the Pac-12 Media Day event is a little over a month away, and I can already tell you it's going to feel like deja vu because the theme is going to be Oregon is kind of carrying the flagship for the Pac-12 in that game against Auburn, much as Washington was last year, and the Pac-12 really needs a team to emerge as a serious college football playoff contender. Obviously, from our previous conversation on the top 10, you kind of see Oregon as more of a maybe a Rose Bowl contender if all goes well, but how important, just in your view, is it for the Pac-12 to turn this thing around sooner rather than later?
I think it's really important because, you know, all of the different pieces of negative press are not linked together, but they all sort of feed in together, whether it's the financial issues and the fact that the Pac-12 network is not a boon financially and they're falling far behind in terms of the annual distribution from TV deals as compared to their peer conferences. All of that stuff, plus the basketball not being good, and then you add in football, which is obviously the sport that drives the train in all of these Power 5 leagues. They all feed together to create this sort of snowball effect, I think, of negativity. And so, and that's before, you know, and I've left a bunch of stuff out, as you guys know even better than I do. So I think it's really important because you can fix a lot of things just by winning. Now, it's hard to do, right? And I think that it's pretty clear the down cycle in terms of football and men's basketball is more than just perception. It's been real just for a lot of different reasons. So if Oregon can beat Auburn and have a really special year and, you know, be in playoff contention down towards the end of the year, whether they actually make it or not, then I think that helps the league. The other thing that I think really helps the league would be if USC can get it going again. I know there's obviously a lot of questions about Clay Helton and whether he's going to make it this year or whatever, but if USC could be good, as much as Duck fans don't want to hear this, when your bell cow is good, then people think your league is good. That if just take it back to this direction of the country. It was only 4 or 5 years ago that the Big 12 was the league that everybody was making fun of and that was having all these sort of internal debates about, are we good enough? Should we are we going to fall apart? You know, the Oklahoma president at the time famously called the league, quote, psychologically disadvantaged, unquote. That's all changed, and it's changed in large part because it's sort of perennial powers, Oklahoma and Texas. Texas and Oklahoma have gotten good. Oklahoma's been to the playoff, you know, several times. Texas, you know, won the Sugar Bowl last year, beating Georgia, appears to be on an upward trajectory back towards contention for, you know, national type of things. When you have that happening, then everything seems more stable and better, and everybody's happier. And so really, whether it's Oregon or whether it's USC or Washington, or if you could find a way for it to be all of the above, especially if USC is good, then people are going to feel a lot better about themselves, and then nationally people feel a lot better about the Pac-12. So I agree, though. The situation is exactly right. It'll be deja vu, whereas last year it was, can Washington carry the flag? And the answer was no, they couldn't. Now it's, can Oregon carry the flag? And to a lesser degree, you know, can USC be good enough to keep Clay Helton's job and be good enough to sort of be the flag bearer for the league again?
Yeah. Well, George, it's great to catch up with you. It's been a few years since you've been back in Oklahoma, but I know you've still got a really strong connection to this community. So we always enjoy having you on, and we'll hope that the Ducks get it going this year, and maybe we see you at Autzen Stadium for a game this year.
Well, I hope so. I will say this. I am looking forward to – I'm about 90% sure as we sit here in June, early June, that I'll at least see their opener at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Jerry World, as we like to call it. But I do think I'll be at that Oregon-Auburn game, and I'm looking forward to it because I know I'll see you guys and some friends of mine who will obviously travel for the game too.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's get some Tex-Mex or something in Dallas when we see you.
I am all on board with that. So when that time gets – when we get closer to that time, I have got the spots, and we'll figure it out. So now you've got me excited because you started talking about food.
We're going to hold you to that. That sounds good.
We could bring you a to-go box of chicken bones if you'd like. I don't know
like
how
that
well that would travel in the overhead.
No, I tell you what I do need, though. Listen, all right, let's just keep this between us, right? But if you guys could find a way to bring in your carry-on and somehow keep them cold, enough Cafe Yum sauces.
Oh yeah,
just sort of in the you know, in the big bottles.
Mm-hmm.
For my wife, I would suddenly be a much happier husband.
We'll make that happen. I think that's doable. Yeah, I think we can make that happen.
I'm not sure you can take it through security is the problem. There was a time, and I know you guys have got to go, and now I'm pushing your podcast time limit, but there was
no
time when you could buy Cafe Yum inside security in Portland. At the Portland airport.
Ah.
I don't know if that's still the case or not. But
well, I haven't booked my flight yet, George, so I'll see if I can go through PDX for you.
Well, yeah, just be sure and tell the guys at the Register Guard that the reason you're going out of Portland is so that you can give somebody Cafe Yum. That'll go well.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, thanks again, George. It's great to catch up with you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Duck Pod. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts.